Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Eddie Bauer. This winter, don't let the cold hold you back from getting outdoors. Eddie Bauer's new Evertherm down jacket is unlike any other. No quilting, no cold spots. This is down. Available exclusively at Eddie Bauer stores or at EddieBauer.com/Evertherm. Eddie Bauer, live your adventure. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com and use the promo code NSS to save 20% off any order.
Tearing down the iPhone 8 Plus, streaming sports in VR, and should you be polite to tech? Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, this is the new Screensavers.
Everybody, episode 125 for October 7th, 2017. This here, Jason Snell from the incomparable and sixcolors.com. It's good to see you, Jason.
Great to be back.
Thanks to Ben Grubb from Down Under for doing the... He's a tech journalist from Australia. Very attractive young man, too.
He's got a future in announcing.
I like it. Mm-hmm. Your weirdest thing happened today. It was very strange. And Joe, I'm glad you're here because... All that happened all day long is people from Australia came in. We had four different groups hanging out in the studio with us, and they coincidentally were from Perth, Brisbane, Sydney, you're from Melbourne?
Sydney again.
But fortunately, Joe showed up. He's from San Francisco. So he broke the whole trend. Anyway, it was fun to have all those Australians. We had a whole Australian family in here, and it was really... it's a trick, though, you can do if you ever, with a bunch of Aussies. They are completely incapable of ignoring it. If you go, watch this. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie!
Oi, oi, oi!
They're completely incapable of not doing that. They have to do that. It's a Pavlovian reaction. And all the Australians at home did the same thing.
They did.
Yeah, it was really fun. Anyway, welcome to the show. I haven't seen you in a while.
So yeah, it's
everything
nice to
going well in the six colors?
Absolutely.
World? Nice.
Doing great.
And the incomparable. And how many podcasts you do now?
I can't count that high.
I know.
At this point,
you're
really
can't.
You're
a very busy guy.
There's a lot of podcasts. Yeah, well, you know,
good
I learn from
stuff.
The best, right?
Well, who was that? Depends who it was.
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't John Dvorak.
No, he's doing quite well, too. It's funny. It's interesting to watch this happen. It happened with Tech TV, too, where they kind of spun off a lot of people. And I think the podcast world is kind of like that, where it's just kind of growing and growing and growing.
Yeah, the interconnectedness. It's really interesting.
I love it. To me, it's great. It means like we're all colleagues and friends and buddies. Coming up on today's show, speaking of friends and colleagues and buddies... Rafe Needleman, old friend. He's going to join us in a second. He's working on something new. It's a very important project. Tech etiquette. He's going to help everybody be more polite. And he'll explain why caller calls back is the new black. It's everybody needs to do it.
I can't wait to find out
what it means.
What a rude robot would be.
We're going to talk about that, too. The new iPhone 8 and the Apple Watches are here. You got the bitty one. I got the big one.
Yeah.
You don't like
it.
You got the 8 and I got the 8 Plus.
That's right.
But you're going to get the iPhone 10, right?
Sure, probably.
Yeah. I guess I have to.
I hope so. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of our jobs.
It's more bitty than this, right? Because there's no bezels.
But it's a little bit bigger than the little one. So it's much smaller than the big one.
I was looking at a comparison of the size of all phones, and I have the silly Essential phone. Remember Andy Rubin's?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's a very small phone, but it's got no...
Few.
Yeah, I'm one of the 5,000. That's all they sold.
But it has no frame, no bezel. So right. it's a big screen and a small phone. And it's actually about the same size as the iPhone 10. It also has a notch. So it gives me an idea of what the 10 will be like in my pocket someday in 2020 when I get one.
When the lines finally ebb and you can get one. Jeez
Louise. Giants' season has ended, the San Francisco Giants.
Oh, what a relief.
It was bad.
Woo!
But if you wanted to see a game in 360, you did have the chance. We're going to talk to the Intel team, the Intel VR team that has all season long been putting out baseball games in virtual reality. And I hope this is a trend that spreads. It's like you're there. Megan Maroney has another edition of her very popular digital cleanse coming up. Getting your passwords in order.
That's a big one.
Yep. And we have questions in the mailbag. We got call for help questions. But let's start with the news of the week. Now, you're pretty platform agnostic. You cover it all.
Well, I mean, Apple's the thing that I've been specializing on for a long time, but I try to pay attention. One of my podcasts is a general tech podcast, so
you know, watch it's my the job Google to pay attention. Announcement.
Absolutely.
Can you remember, what did Google announce? 8 or 9 new products. I mean, a huge number.
It was a flood of new. This is the Google event this week.
I can't think of any event, Apple, Google, anybody, that with this many products, new products were announced.
The only thing that competes with it maybe is Amazon announcing 10 different Echoes.
Yeah,
but
that was silly because it was all just different kind of shapes.
Shapes of the same
The plastic
product,
was different. So Google announced, it's of course long expected, Pixel 2 phones. There's going to be, just like Apple, a little one and a big
two
one.
Two and the 2XL, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting, unlike Apple, though, Google has decided to do one lens instead of two. They say, computationally, we don't need the two lenses because we can play with, we take many pictures at a time and play with those images to create much the same thing. They've got a portrait effect. We'll see.
Yeah, they say that each pixel has two subpixels on the sensor, and that using that, they can do some parallax or some calculations to do what Apple uses two cameras for. Now, I am looking forward to people testing this out because it sounds a little bit like they're faking it.
It's like if you said, well, I don't need two eyes for stereo vision. I just need, but you know what? You actually do this. I just, because you saccade, your eye goes back and forth. I don't have stereo vision because my eyes are independent. They have minds of their own. And frankly, I can actually do this with one eye closed because of the slight saccading movements of my eyeball. I kind of liken it to that, although this is only a micron and a 1.4 micron pixel, so it's not going
narrow. But they say with their machine learning they can do it. And the fact is, even with the two very close together cameras that are on that iPhone Plus,
it's a lot.
Apple still has some issues with discerning between depth and foreground.
There's a lot of computation.
There's a lot going on here. But I love that tech companies are trying to use all of this machine learning and all of this technology that they've got and all these amazing image sensors to, bottom line, make pretty pictures that make us feel happy.
Nilay Patel made a very good point. Of course, the new Pixel phones, much like the Apple phones, don't have a headphone jack.
No, they don't.
Nilay's always said that was user hostile. Yep. I'm not sure I disagree with him. I like having a headphone jack. Increasingly, though, we're getting phones without connections. I imagine the Lightning port and the Type-C port will disappear at some point, and it'll just be a sealed glass thing that you do all the stuff you want to do wirelessly.
Right.
Apple has its AirPods, which are designed to work with the iPhone. They'll work with other ones, but other phones, because they're standard Bluetooth, but not as well.
Yeah. Google
announced their Buds.
Yeah, the Pixel Buds.
Pixel Buds, which is same thing. They work best with a Pixel. They are using Bluetooth 4.2. It's nothing fancy. There's no W1 chip. But Nilay pointed out, this is bad, because what's going to happen is you're going to have to get the headphones that go with your phone going forward. If you want the best results, you're going to get wireless headphones. If you have a Google phone, you're going to get them from Google. If you have an Apple phone, you're going to get them from Apple or Beats. And I agree with him. Headphones used to be a standard.
It's possible that he's right. I would say that this is a way for vendors to push things forward when they feel constrained by the existing standards, right?
Maybe that's it.
Apple, with Bluetooth 5.0, which is on the way, but it's not in a lot of devices yet, it's possible Apple didn't need to build its own chip for the AirPods.
They could have used Bluetooth 5.
But it wasn't ready for them.
Right.
And so they built their own thing.
Right.
And I think what you're seeing with Apple's take on wireless charging, where they're supporting Qi, but they're also sort of supporting some extensions to the format, you know, that's the best case scenario, is these developers, they roll out custom stuff, but then they kind of hand it off to a standards body and say, just make this the standard. The downside is, if this is just an eternal internal thing where the next phone comes out with its new thing, right. and the new thing doesn't support the standard. And once again, you're put in this position that if you want to have the best wireless headphones for an iPhone, you have to buy an Apple product. Or you have to buy Google's earbuds if you want a Pixel.
I love the AirPods, and we'll see with the Pixel Buds. not the best name. Same idea, though. That's the Google Assistant.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, that instant translation, that looks pretty cool.
One of the smartest things in the entire demo was not just saying, well, look, we've got phone hardware and we've got some wireless earbuds, but saying, let's show you what Google's machine learning and cloud services and processing power do with that hardware.
Right.
Because otherwise it's like,
that's
oh boy,
their secret sauce.
There's more earbuds in the world.
Right.
But when they can take the Google Translate and do the real-time translation stuff, and you get in almost like a Star Trek Universal Translator kind of thing, it makes for a great demo. I mean,
sure
in
does.
Reality, we'll see. But they had the lady speaking Swedish on stage and translating on the fly. And this is the world we're going to live in. I mean, it's going to be...
It's the Babelfish. It's straight out of Hitchhiker's
Guide
to the Galaxy. I mean, it's amazing. This is the weird thing. Go ahead and keep showing that. They announced a standalone camera, the Google Clip.
Yes.
$250, and you put it on a flower sack.
Flower, yep.
Or whatever. But, you know, you don't hold it. You put it somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, if it were now, I would put it here. And just let it run the whole show. And at the end of the show, you get your Google Pixel phone out, and you look at the pictures it took, because it stores them locally, 16 gigs of storage, and then you pick the best images. And it says, we're using artificial intelligence to automatically get the... There's no audio, but they're live photos, so there's video
yeah.
plus stills. I think this is a really strange product. I don't understand it at all.
It is super weird. It's a great showcase for their machine learning image processing stuff. I have a theory. My theory is that they came up with all of these ideas about what if you just left your smartphone camera running all the time,
right.
what could you do?
Right.
And they realized you're not going to do that with your phone.
Right.
You couldn't prop it somewhere anyway. It wouldn't work. And then somebody said, what if we just built it into a little standalone thing, but we could use all this awesome machine learning-based software that we've developed? And so this is this product. It's weird. It's $250. I don't know how many of these they're going to sell.
They're not.
It does show you, I don't know, maybe it's just showcasing the state of the art where they've got this ability to do all this awesome stuff
yeah.
with photo processing and
I
they want to show it off.
Because I don't think they even worry about whether this is a product that's going to make its
right.
way or not.
But if you imagine every single home camera that we've got, the Canaries of the world, all
started
those different kinds,
that.
Right?
Yeah.
If you think out 5 years, they're all going to have these
yeah.
features where literally they're going to be able to blanket your house with photo and video coverage. And at the end of the day, say, here are some great candids from your house.
Actually, doesn't the Nest... I know Google was at pains to say Nest is an independent division. We let Nest do what they want, even though they're owned by Alphabet. But doesn't the Nest IQ, that's the idea, right? It's a smart camera, we have some lying around. It's supposed to identify, it doesn't do a very good job, I noticed, but it's supposed to identify people and figure out who's where and then eventually learn, although it never seemed to learn, when you're home and when you're not, when it's somebody that's not you or somebody
right,
that's not seen before in the house. So I do think you're right.
And the Clips is says
same
it'll
idea.
Do this too.
Yeah.
And I think also this is an interesting product because it allows Google to say not everything we do is creepy and uploaded to the cloud. That
right.
this is doing what
we
Apple
do
does
yes.
with its machine learning stuff, which is do it all on device. This
right.
thing does not upload video and photos to the internet. It stays on device, and then you connect with your phone and choose what you want to upload. And I this makes a lot of sense in terms of like sending a message about what Google's capabilities are and how they want people to feel about Google. As a product, it's probably more of a tech demo than...
Yeah, I think
but
you're right.
But every home security camera is going to have this feature.
I think you're right. So Hurricane Irma trashed, you know, Florida, trashed Puerto Rico significantly. Puerto Rico is still mostly without power in much of the island. Water is tight. And, of course, if you think about what life would be like without power... You can't get money out of the ATM. I mean, everything starts to break down. So our, you know, prayers, our thoughts, and I hope money and help go to Puerto Rico.
Yes.
It's interesting because Elon Musk stepped forward earlier this week and said, hey, wait a minute. If we're going to rebuild the grid, which we have to do, why don't we rebuild it using battery systems, possibly from Elon, and solar power? He says, the Tesla team has done this for many smaller islands around the world, but there's no scalability limit. It can be done for Puerto Rico. And the governor of Puerto Rico said, yeah, bring it on. They're talking. Wouldn't it be amazing? Now, of course, it's going to cost money. But the money has already been allocated for this. The grid has to be rebuilt.
That's the point, right? I mean, in a lot of places where there's no grid, you start to see solar and battery things happen because you're
starting from scratch.
And that's basically what he's saying is Puerto Rico sounds like
has to start
from scratch. So let's do it right. Let's do it 21st century grid this time.
I love that idea.
It's very cool. Also, Project Loon, the Google balloons, got approval yesterday from the FCC to do emergency cell service.
So they could have
via balloon.
It doesn't just have to be internet. It could be for cells.
Yeah, over Puerto Rico, which is another cool little interesting tech solution to this disaster. Yeah,
it might be a real opportunity for Puerto Rico to kind of leapfrog with infrastructure. Let's hope so. Sad day. 20 years in, AOL Instant Messenger is no more.
I think you've got till December to send IMs to your friends. I checked. I had two people still logged into my buddy list.
Do you really?
I did. I found a computer that still had, still logged into AIM. And
we used it a lot. I remember my daughter, who's 25 now, but when she was in high school, that's how she communicated. They weren't on the phone. I remember I thought this is a real revolution. As a teenager, we were on the phone. She was on AIM all the time with her friends. But by the time her brother, 2 years later, came up, it was Skype and it was video and it's funny how it changed. Now
it's Snapchat and Instagram and all sorts of other things.
Yeah.
But they talk about like they were predicting what was going to happen, but they couldn't make it pay off for them. So it just sort of died. But it was huge. We used it all the time at work. I used it with friends. I remember sitting on my couch with a laptop and an AIM chat room talking about the 2004 World Series, like with a bunch of Boston Red Sox fans. And it was so great to have these people who were all over the country talking baseball as it was happening on our TVs. And that was AIM was the thing that let us do that. But that was a long time ago now.
I feel like AIM... There we go. Look at that. Did you have that font? Because that is an attractive
That is a really nice... Typeface. That's what computers looked like in 2005, kids. what's AIM going to do?
I feel like AOL was ordered, I'm dimly remembering this, to open up the AIM back end to other chat clients.
The FCC at one point tried to put the hooks
because they had a monopoly.
To say this needs to be a public, publicly accessible thing.
There's a model for that.
And it turned out that it didn't need to happen.
Well, I think you can make the case that because they did that, a lot of... Remember, it was just ICQ and AIM.
I'm not sure the interoperability is the thing that made it go away, though. But yeah, there was like Google did a gateway.
Google Chat. All these things opened up all of a sudden, and we got this, you know, diversity of chat clients. And if it weren't for that, I don't know if there'd be a Slack. They might not even be a Snapchat.
Maybe
it'd just
not.
Be AIM everywhere.
Ugh. Yeah.
Ugh.
That's no good.
Finally, you know, whenever I hear numbers, like when Equifax says, oh, yeah, we had 143 million. Accounts got exfiltrated from our system. I always say, don't believe that number yet. It's going to get bigger.
It's we know of.
That we know of.
That on. That
and in fact, it
of.
Did get better. Equifax added another couple of million.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, well.
A few more. But this is the biggest one I've ever heard of. Yahoo announced, remember, that in 2013, it had been hacked. They announced this a few months ago. And 1 billion accounts were exfiltrated from Yahoo servers. Well, now they probably counted. And they said, oh, no, it's not 1 billion. It's everyone.
It's 3 billion
users.
Good news, everybody. If you were wondering if you're a victim of the Yahoo hack, now you know. You were. All of you. Every
one
of us.
Yeah, who didn't have a Yahoo account, right? Who doesn't have
a Yahoo? Did you play fantasy football? You've got a Yahoo account. Did you use Flickr? You have a Yahoo account.
My Yahoo? Remember My Yahoo? I liked My Yahoo.
Yeah, I used that when I wasn't using AIM.
It's kind of the grandma's front page, but I had it. Anyway, so just so you know, Yahoo.
Yahoo. So, if you have a password or had a password on Yahoo that you use everywhere, oh, my God,
everybody
change
has
your password
it.
Now.
But you know what's funny is I don't think we'll ever have a greater breach because 3 billion is everybody.
It's hard to imagine that there were 3 billion Yahoo accounts, but apparently there were.
A lot of spammers. Hey, I want to show you my new winter coat. This is a nice coat. We're going to take a break, come back. We've got lots more coming up. This is my Eddie Bauer. I'm an Eddie Bauer fan. I'm wearing an Eddie Bauer sweater. But this is my Eddie Bauer Evertherm jacket. Now, do you ever go skiing or up to the mountains or anywhere where it's cold?
Sure. And I live in Northern California. I live in the Bay Area, which means that I don't really own a good jacket.
You might look at this and say, well, Leo, that's a windbreaker. No, my friends. This Evertherm jacket will go down to 15 below. This is a down jacket without the puffy, without the quilting. In fact, it turns out, if you go to the website, eddiebauer.com/everthermon, look at the infrared images, that the quilting is actually leaking heat. See that? There's a puffy down jacket. And then look on the left, the Evertherm down jacket, it's uniform. The heat retention, which is red, is uniform compared to the puffs. Besides, you look like the Michelin man when you're wearing those puffy jackets. There's no quilting, no cold spots. This holds heat better than traditional down. It's using the new 30G thin down insulation. It's a down fabric, not down clusters. So there's no migration, no balling up. It's down without the puff. And it looks like, look at this, you look like you're wearing a windbreaker. But no, you are warm. And boy, is this light. Go ahead, just feel. This is Lisa's, so this will be a little small for you. That's 11 ounces.
Yeah, and it feels soft. It feels like down.
I know. Wind resistant. Light. It includes storm repel, water resistant DWR technology. Men and women, that's the small. I've got wearing the XL, and it's been tested. Eddie Bauer's got world class guides on Mount Everest, Kilimanjaro, the Grand Tetons. Next time you go ice climbing in Colorado, snowshoeing through New Hampshire's White Mountains, this is what you wear. Eddie, isn't that nice? Look at that. Evertherm. Go to Eddie Bauer, EddieBauer.com. I love Eddie Bauer stuff. I've been an Eddie Bauer customer for my whole life because I grew up in New England. But go to EddieBauer.com/Evertherm. No quilting, no cold spots. This is down. I want to just go to the snow to roll around and try it.
Look at that inside.
I know. It's so nice. So if you get, you know, you get in an avalanche, you just turn your jacket outside, inside out, and you get the bright international orange. Help me! EddieBauer.com/Evertherm. Aren't those nice?
Very nice.
Light! All right. It is time. We're going to do a little teardown. Our friends... before we do that, that's coming up. I fix it. We're going to tear down our phone and our watch.
No, we have rude robots.
It's rude robots. Rafe Needleman's on the line. Hey, Rafe!
Hey, how you doing?
It's great to see you again. I see you have a rude robot over your shoulder there.
No, that's a polite robot.
Oh, that's a nice one.
That robot is what does whatever... we want it to do.
Rafe has a new mission in life. Rafe, you've worked everywhere. I know you were recently up here in Healdsburg working with our friends at O'Reilly and Make. You're at Cisco now, right?
That's right. Yep.
But this is a sideline, but a very important sideline. We're bringing back tech etiquette. Now, I remember in the original screensavers, we would talk about netiquette.
Yep.
But it hasn't kept up with the modern world. So your new, is it going to be a book?
From your lips to God's ears.
I hope so. Any publishers listening, this is the book. It's going to be a big bestseller. I heard you tell Megan that you want to call this Caller Calls Back.
Yeah, actually that's the site. I registered the site, callercallsback.com. And when every now and then, when I have some time, when Cisco isn't keeping me too busy, I put up a post or two.
I love this. Callercallsback.com. Now, I want to tell everybody how important this is. Rule number one: caller calls back.
Okay, what does that mean?
Are you with me on that one?
Rule number one. I told my daughter. She said, "I didn't know that." I said, "Nobody knows that. Rafe made it up, but it's a good rule." Did you make this up?
I would love to take credit for it. I may have seen it one or two other places before, but it just makes sense to me. So I want it to be a thing, and I want it to be called caller calls back. Which is whenever you're on a cell phone call and it disconnects, which is always, the person who placed the call is the one who makes the call back.
This solves a major real problem because both people try to call and then both people get voicemail and they say, I'm calling you. And it's just the world's worst. Whoever placed the call remakes the call. Caller calls back. Right now, Rafe, if you died this second, and I died this second, our job here would be done. We would have completed our mission on Earth. This is the most important netiquette rule of all.
Yes. So we could just leave it there, or I could go.
No, why don't we do an interview? Because we got all this time to waste. So let's – by the way, it did need to be updated, didn't it? We had this idea of netiquette, and a lot of it was things like – you know, keep your signature and your email under three lines. Mm-hmm. It was dopey stuff that isn't applicable anymore.
Well, technology, almost all of our communication, person-to-person communication these days, is mediated through technology. And the old rules don't upscale or don't apply or got totally different issues. We're all communicating with emojis on electronic disconnected devices. Our cars are driving themselves. We're talking to robots. They're talking back to us. Nobody knows how to be polite in this society. And, you know, considering that we're all getting all crunched in together, we might as well learn how to be nice to each other.
Here's a good one that never really cropped up. We all have GPS now in our vehicles. Many of us have spouses or girlfriends or boyfriends. If we're lucky enough to have somebody else in our lives, I'm driving. The GPS says go one way. Lisa, my lovely wife, says go another. Break the tie.
Me?
Yeah. You're the king of etiquette.
Yes. So you break the tie. You always, always listen to the human being. Always. It's not worth it otherwise. Remember, the rule is this. This is how you remember. It's really quite simple. Remember who you're going home with.
You're not going to bed with your GPS. Let's put it that
way. That's right.
That's yep. right. I learned this the hard way from my ex-wife.
Ex-wife. So, that is a perfect example of how etiquette has changed over time. And this is something that comes up all the time. And I have to confess, but the car says, and you're right, I should just say yes to you.
Yeah. That's a little bit common sense, isn't it? Like, trust the human being.
How long have you been married?
23 years.
It's common sense to you. I'm on my third wife. We didn't even have GPS for the first two.
Imagine.
A lot of that really is common sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, what they say about common sense, it's not very common.
Yeah, this is true.
God knows I don't have any.
So what is the tech etiquette for robots? What do robots need to disclose to us?
I like that.
Well, that's developing. But the thing that I'm very interested in is do chatbots. You know, when you get online and you're chatting with customer service, a text chat, does the thing that you're chatting with have to identify itself as a robot if it is a robot? And can it lie? Because a lot of them can take a conversation pretty far.
It drives me nuts.
Yeah.
And you find out they're a robot, you feel let down. You feel insulted. You feel lied to.
Yes.
You said your name was Ann. It's not Ann. It's Robot.
Robot Ann, to be fair.
Right, so I believe that the right thing to do is for the robot to identify itself as a robot because we have certain expectations in the dialogue between two entities. You know, if I'm talking to a person, I'm going to make small talk. I'm going to try to butter them up, trying to get them on my side. If I'm talking to a robot, it's just like, hello, lights. You know, that's it. Aziz, lights. You know, that's it. That's all you want to say. Oh, I got Blue Angels flying over me right now. Sorry if there's noise.
Oh, it's Fleet Week in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. So I think one of the challenges with that is the gray area where you've got something. It's unclear whether it's a robot or it's a human who's firing off like pre-baked responses until you get to the point where it needs to respond to you. But, you know, phone trees don't pretend that there are people talking to
but
you.
But how would a robot reveal? Would it say, I am a robot?
Hello, this is an automated response? Yeah, right?
Right. And if you start to get it, because these things can identify your sentiment. So if you start to curse at it because you're talking to your cable company and you start to be angry, it's like, why can't you just do what you're supposed to do like you said you would? The robot should say, one moment, please.
Let me transfer you to a human operator.
Or it could even say, and there's no reason for it not to say, sir, there is no need to take that tone with me. I will transfer you to a human now. Because, you know, all that stuff is being recorded, and whether it's a robot or human, we should be held accountable for being jerks.
I am sorry to sense your powerful emotions. I shall transfer you.
I'm sorry. I don't want a robot to throw shade at me. That does not sound pleasant.
You seem to be angry. Transferring.
Screw you, robot.
Yeah.
You're my servant.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to work out that way, Leo.
Robots.
I am employed by the company that made me, sir.
Oh, I can feel my blood pressure going up already. I can tell. All right, how about this one, speaking of blood pressure? Hello, sir, this is Windows calling. You have a virus on your computer. What do you do when you get those scam calls? Do you talk to them? A lot of people I know give them a runaround for hours.
That's the game. I was so happy I got one of those calls. I was so delighted because I've been waiting to get the Windows. Here I am sitting on, you know, I've got three Macs in my office. Your Windows computer is infected. So the thing that everybody wants to do, if you're a nerd, is to drag it out as long as you can, right?
Yeah, that's not nice.
So that's well. I did a decision tree or a chart, a game theory chart on what to do when this happens. Because what happened when this call came in for me is I decided to try to change the scammer's ways.
This is awesome. Look at this.
I said, you need a job. I understand that.
Oh, that's good.
But you're really hurting somebody.
Oh, God, that's good. You know what I did?
Here's what happened.
What?
The person on the other end said, screw you, you a-hole, and hung up on me.
Yes! I did this. Rafe, we have the same instincts. But I was worse. I said, does your mother know that you call older people and try to scam them out of their money? Does your mother know that? Same exact response, by the way.
So I called my mother after this happened and said, did I do the right thing? And that's where that decision chart came
from.
Oh,
mom knows best. Yeah.
Yeah, my mother is super highly evolved ethical sense. And she said, all you need to say is shame on you.
Oh, I like
that. That's it. Shame.
Shame on you.
Shame on you. And I think she's right about that. But anyway, the chart is basically what it comes down to is no matter how good it makes you feel to try to game them or to shame them or whatever, you're not going to make a difference to the world at large. So you might as well just hang up and save your time. This is the only decision. I've done a bunch of decision charts, and this is the only one where all the outcomes are negative. So you might as well just save time.
Just save time, get your life back, and say, shame on you, click.
Yeah.
That's funny because that's the decision I came to.
Yeah, the best case scenario you could have is if enough of those pile up,
that maybe
for
feel
them
some shame.
To quit their job and go do something more
acceptable. I have to say, I have a flaw, which is I always try to see it from the other person's point of view. Even somebody doing this, I always say, well, they're probably really poor, and this was the only job they could get.
Yeah,
they got a college education.
With my mother.
Yeah. So I feel bad for them.
A crime's a crime. You're me, and I'm my mother. Crime is a crime.
Yes, Mom.
They know what they're doing, son.
Okay, Mom.
Right?
You're right.
I agree with you.
Shame on you.
Human
That's
mother.
All you have to say. Shame on you. Man, I love this. Caller Calls Back is the website. It's the new rules for high tech.
21st century netiquette.
Yeah. How to name conference rooms?
Oh, that's just the one I threw out there.
I like it, though, because you go to these fancy high tech places, and they got crazy names. Mm-hmm. And you don't know where the hell you are. So you say you should have practical names. Is that what you're saying?
You should encode location in the name.
Yes.
Evernote, where I used to work, there are four or five floors that we had in the building. And there was the north side and the south side. And every conference room was named after a computer game.
No.
And the A's are on the first floor. And the two words were north and one word was south. And it actually, that scheme worked for the entire building. So Dig Dug was fourth floor, north side.
Oh, that's pretty good. So it could still be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We had Hitchcock movies at one of my places of where you think that would be too silly.
I don't want to meet at the birds.
But actually, North by Northwest and Rear Window were
perfect
names for the locations of the conference room. So whoever did
Psycho
a great job.
Psycho was right next to the CEO's
and Psycho
office.
Is in the bathroom, probably.
Right.
Next to
Rope
the shower.
Rope would be... Where would that be?
Rope is at the top of a rope ladder in a treehouse.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I come up with this all the time. This happens all the time. Uber, Airbnb. Mm-hmm. At the end of the stay or at the end of the drive, you have to rate the driver. Yeah. I just always give him 5 stars.
You are.
I am, because I have to say, I look at the star ratings, and if I get a 2-star driver, I say, no, not you.
Right.
Why am I right?
Well, from personal experience, I wrote this one because I have a downstairs Airbnb.
Oh, you have an Airbnb.
If you go below 4.7 or 4.8, you start to fall in the rankings. And the same thing happens with Lyft and Airbnb. I mean, with Lyft and Uber.
You could actually really hurt somebody.
Yeah. So if you have if you're just feeling a little crabby, or maybe the driver was a little curt, or maybe they took a minute or two longer, or maybe
that's not a star.
A spider showed up, you ding them a star, you could actually hurt their income. Yeah. And this is somebody who has to drive an Uber for a living.
Did your mom give you this decision table?
No, this one was mine. Because I used to be a product reviewer, you know, and yeah, I never gave anything a perfect score.
Nothing gets five out of five. Yeah. That's right. That's what kills me about it, too, is nothing is good enough to be 5 out of 5. But the truth is, it's not a 5-point system, right? The truth is, Uber, Airbnb, any of these
things. It's really a binary
system. It's actually
system.
A thumbs up, thumbs down system, but they pretend that it's not.
Yeah. So unless somebody was really awful.
Right.
Really awful. Give them 5 stars.
Yeah, it really should be. Yeah, 5.
Okay, that's what I've been doing, even for awful ones. I just go, fine, whatever.
Yeah, it's 5 or 1. I mean, unless they're dangerous and you're worried about the next person being a victim of them, it's a 5.
Yeah, that's
different. Then but if they're really terrible, you have a responsibility to rate it a 0 or a 1, as low as you can go. But nothing in between makes any sense because it is their income. You're not talking about, you know, dinging HP's laptop because it's a little heavier than the Dell, you know, and somebody has to decide between two things. These are people's lives.
Yeah. And nobody's relying on your personal opinion directly. You're just building the aggregate response.
Now, eBay, maybe ratings are different.
Yeah, sure. Or Amazon ratings even.
Those should be on a scale of 0 to 5.
Well,
Because it isn't a binary.
Right. But something like Uber, I mean, this is the truth, is Uber should not have a 5-star system. They should change it to be thumbs up. Like Netflix did with their ratings, where they said, you know what, this is too much gradation. People don't need this level of gradation. Did you have a good ride or not? Is all they really need to know. And instead, we're put in this position where we're like, well, it was a little bit slow. He took a wrong turn, but he was nice. Do I give him 4? And the answer is no, don't give him 4. You might as well give him 0 at that point. You're ruining his score. And that's Uber shouldn't ask us to do that, but they don't seem to care.
I love this, Rafe, because you're bringing this stuff up to the conscious level, because we live in this world. It's so rapidly changing, and we're faced with these new things.
It used to be
time.
How much I tip, and now it's what do I rate in the app, right? Yeah. The rules are different.
And it's good. It's good to think, and you think clearly. The website caller calls back with the single most important rule: if the line drops, the caller calls you back.
Well, know that this is one when Apple and Google build this into their phone apps, where a call drops and it says, "You called this person. Would you like to call back?" And the other one is, "The other person will probably call you. Just wait."
Ooh, I got to patent it.
Then we'll never get it.
And somebody in the chat room saying, "Oh, I knew this all along. I've always assumed that." No, but most people don't. And every time a call drops, we both try to call, and nobody gets through.
You press that call back button.
Caller calls back. I told my daughter this. She said, "But I can't remember who called." I said, "Remember."
That's what the software is for.
Rafe, it's great to talk to you.
Always a pleasure.
Good luck. Everybody, just call your local publisher. And do you have a local publisher? Call your local publisher and say, "Hey, there's a book that needs to be published."
It's a great idea.
Callercallsback.com. Get Rafe a contract in the mail immediately. Thanks, Rafe. Take care. We'll talk again soon. I want to do this as an ongoing series because I have all sorts of things like Snapchat.
Well, send me your conundrums.
I will. I'll send you. I got conundrums.
I'm working on one on binge watching etiquette.
Oh, man. Here's a big one.
Oh boy,
I'm watching Stranger Things, right? And I stop at episode 3. It's coming up later this month. We all know. And Lisa and I go to bed because we watched 3 episodes. She goes back and watches episode 4. Yeah. Is that okay?
No, she's cheating on you.
She's cheating on me.
She needs a side binge.
Yep.
She needs a side binge.
She does.
Yeah, show that you're not watching, but she is, that she can go to when you're not co-binging.
You watch The Defenders together, and then you do what I do, which is you just watch Iron Fist by yourself because she doesn't want to watch that.
She doesn't want to watch that.
No.
Yeah.
So it's always good to know what your wife doesn't want to watch or your husband. Rafe Nealon, great to talk to you. Callercallsback.com. I really appreciate it. Isn't that awesome?
We need to do this segment.
I'm telling you, it's a regular feature. Mm-hmm. It's going to be. So, I'm not a big fan of VR, but I think there is one thing in the world. I think
immersive events are
a natural for virtual reality. A perfect example is while it's best to watch football, which is a very complex game on TV, you'll see more. There's something great about going to the stadium and experiencing the environment. It would be great if we could merge the two. Well, that's what Intel is up to. They have created, they've been doing this all season long, virtual reality broadcasts of major league games. Jerry and Anthony are baseball fans, so they said, can we go to AT&T Park and visit Intel? They talked with David Aufhauer. He's the managing director of Intel Sports, and they asked him about the Intel True VR technology and why Intel's doing it. Why?
At the end of the day, what we're doing with Intel Sports and VR is changing the way that fans engage, interact with content. So we enable fans, we enable brands for their fans to build experiences that take fans to places that they have never been able to go before, or that they can experience in an entirely new way by immersing themselves in the content. We have an end-to-end solution from the cameras to the production to the streaming platform to the end user experience that enables that for fans. So a typical event will have anywhere from 3 to 8 cameras. A baseball game will have anywhere from 3 to 5, so it depends on location. One of the unique things about baseball is every stadium is unique. So we have 3 or 4 camera positions that we have, generally speaking, for each stadium. In San Francisco today, we have cameras in each of the dugouts. When we were in Arizona, we had a camera in the pool. When we were in Boston, we had a camera literally in the Green Monster. So we'll do something that's really unique for each team. Each fan can actually choose which camera angle they want to view at any given point in time. So it's a super personalized experience. Or you can lean back, click VR Cast, and let the producer tell the story the same way you would tell any other story in watching and experiencing content. We actually refer to our cameras as pods, because each pod actually has 12 camera lenses in it. So it's pairs of lenses, 12 lenses in each one. And what it really does is mimic the human head. So wherever you're looking is what you see when you're in the VR experience. Stats is such an important part of the storytelling. If you look left, you see some graphics and stats. You look right, you see pitcher batter data and statistics. You can actually take the data and the stats and visually put them right in front of you. So between innings, you can play around with the data. And then at the end of the inning, you can throw it back to the sides. We have a virtual scoreboard. And then down below, we have the camera switching and the ability to move forward and backward through the, you know, like DVR type functionality throughout the experience. When we do the VR cast, we have a producer-director that's producing the VR cast, and we have a pretty lean crew that comes in, sets up the cameras. All the cameras are unmanned, so that makes it easy. And we have a truck that sits in the bay with the other trucks, but it's a fairly small footprint, so we can get away with doing really efficient production. Our vision is to enable fans to experience in a virtual reality all types of different experiences. So the ability to walk on the field during the game, the ability to see the game or feel what it's like to be the game from a player point of view, the ability to sit in the owner's box, the ability to sit in the dugout and fully experience what it's like to be at the game in real time with all kinds of interactivity around you where you as the fan can control that personalized experience.
Well, now I can throw up while watching a baseball game too. That's good. That's exciting.
The tech baseball we think of as this pastoral American, you know, 19th century game.
The most technology.
MLB Advanced Media is worth billions of dollars.
We were talking
ABC
about
bought it. They employ all of these people who used to be kind of just fans on the side are all being employed by clubs or by Advanced Media. They have the StatCast product that's 3D mapping every single player and the ball trajectory and, you know, everything that's going on in the field. And then that's all like in a fire hose of data that apps can use, that this VR application can use, that augmented reality can use. Baseball is in many ways like the sport that has embraced technology the most. The question is, how do you make it something that people want to see? Because they've got all the data now. They've got all the tech.
Yeah, you don't want to overwhelm the game.
They got the VR tech.
Well,
how do you show it?
Talking about augmented reality, which I think is a nice thing to do. So you could be watching the game, enjoying the game, but I don't know, maybe with your special glasses, you could tap the fielder and see, well, how does he match up against this guy? Is he positioned right? Should he be shaded a little bit left?
And
things like that.
MLB At Bat app is going to have that next year where
really?
You're going to be able to hold up an iPhone and tap on the shortstop and see his fielding range. Or after a ball is hit, hold it up and see, you know, in augmented reality, the path of the ball and the path of the speed of the runners.
The first use of AR kit that sounds really worth it.
We'll see if it's actually, I mean, the challenge is how do you get all of this data they're collecting and show it in a way that is going to be understandable and useful for people.
Because, and not overwhelming the screen.
Yeah,
with
or
numbers.
Pointless, right? You want it to just be enough, and that's going to be how they have to figure it out. But the tech is there. They just have to figure out how to apply it.
So that's going to be in the 2018
At Bat app.
Or 2017, 2018.
The 2018 for next spring,
I guess it would be next spring.
Yeah. Wow. So it's not there
that
now,
is
but they're
really
working on that.
Cool.
I was at AT&T Park seeing that too. So Intel's doing VR stuff. MOB is building AR stuff. There's
love
a lot
it.
Of tech going into it. Baseball stuff right now.
You know, and by the way, we should point out that while Apple has ARKit, I mean, Google's not going to be too far behind with their AR Core.
That's right.
They're doing something very similar.
Yeah, they were working on it too. And then when Apple made so much hay with ARKit being announced, Google, to their credit, I think, said, you know, we're working on
this
too.
Well, they had Project Tango, which was a very heavy hardware platform. Mm-hmm. No, they couldn't get very many people to adopt the hardware platform. Ironically, Apple has that hardware platform on the iPhone X, but it's facing you. It's facing the it's facing the wrong way. And as you know, great as this camera is on the iPhone 8, it's not enough to give you all of that data that you could do really good AR with, right?
Yeah, it's got a lot, but yeah, you know that's the next step, right? Is that whole load of sensors
put that
is
notch
be
on the back
on the backside too?
Yeah, I'm surprised in a way they didn't. They were so selling AR.
I think they feel confident enough in the data they can get out of the two cameras, but we'll see. But yeah, it's both Google and Apple know AR. Smartphones are the best platform for AR right now because glasses are going to be cumbersome.
Sure.
Everybody's got a phone with great cameras and a great processor.
Yep.
So
yep.
that's what you need for AR.
And arguably, Apple's not even arguably much better than Google's. The Snapdragon 835, which Google's using in their new platform, doesn't even come close to the A11 Bionic.
Yep.
This thing, the silicon. In fact, this is over-designed. If you ask me, there's more power in this than it needs.
It's hard to imagine. I mean, AR is a good application for it. Well, I've got my 12.9 iPad Pro here, and it's the same thing. Like, this is as fast as a laptop. That's as fast as a Pro laptop.
Right.
But
do you need it?
Do you, for certain applications?
Nobody's going to design an app that requires the speed of the A11 Bionic because it would leave everybody else in the cold.
Other than things like AR and VR, maybe.
Right.
But that's about it.
Well, let's take a look inside the new iPhone 8 as well as the new Apple Watch. The Series 3 from iFixit. Adam Okam is on the line. Hi, Adam.
Hey.
Great to see you. iFixit is noted for tearing things apart.
Yay, we love it.
So that you can fix them better. We should mention iFixit is a sponsor. We're proud to have them as a sponsor. But I knew that you guys would get a hold of the iPhone immediately, that you'd get a hold of the Apple
Watch.
Often
in Australia because
that's right.
That's the first place you can tear it apart.
So let's start with the Series 3 Apple Watch.
Yes.
Both of us are wearing the red
dots.
Those
are red dots.
The red dots,
that's
the only
right,
way you would know. Did you tear it down?
Yeah, we had we have a watch expert in-house that tore it down, and it was pretty interesting.
It's a little harder, I would guess, to tear down something this small than an iPhone, right? I mean, you can only use the spudgers so far on a watch.
Definitely really fragile. So, it's hard to get into.
Are there screws? Are there any fasteners that you could see on the watch that you could
there,
get into it?
There are some on the inside, but not on the outside. Just heat and prying is kind of what it takes.
Heat and prying. That's where the fabulous iFixit eye opener comes in. You heat it up in a microwave. You put it on the watch. You soften the glue, and then
pop.
Hold
goes
your breath.
The basil.
So you took. It looks like you took the face off first. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what are those chips on the face? It looks like there's some processors on the face itself.
Yeah. So those are going to mostly be for the display and the touch sense.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. They said that they put the antenna for the LTE Series 3 in the screen. Can we see the antenna?
Yeah. It's around the edge. So, in those pictures, the
is it the orange part? Is that the antenna? Where's the?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right. I guess that's a reasonable place to put it.
Yeah, it makes for like a seamless case design, which is kind of cool.
I think that they claimed the display was part of the antenna, but that doesn't sound like that's actual. Or is it? It's glass or sapphire.
They probably mean the display unit,
holds,
right? The display housing.
Holds the antenna. Okay. Where's the eSIM? Were you able to find it?
Yeah. I don't have one right here, but in the teardown.
We have the screen.
We have
the
guess,
website. Yeah. You have a guess. You're not sure.
Yeah, it's probably the red chip.
Okay.
Or the one outlined in red.
Okay. Google's going to do that as well in the new Pixels. They're going to have an eSIM in there. It'll only work with Project Fi initially. What is an eSIM? Is it a microprocessor, 32-bit MCU with an ARM Secure SC300? At least that's what the numbers on the back say.
Yeah. So what it does is works basically the same as a normal SIM card, but it's rewritable.
Right.
And so,
oh, okay.
You can just, you know, potentially make a call into your service provider and say, hey, I want to transfer my SIM card. Instead of like replacing your SIM card, they just do something remotely to it, and
that writes the new information. Mm-hmm. So it's like an EEPROM a little bit. It's a programmable memory in effect. That's kind of cool.
Now it saves a lot of space, so it's an interesting new technology.
Yeah, and well, you need to save space in something this.
Yeah,
one of the things though, I was really impressed with. I don't know what your experience has been so far, but the battery life on this seems like through the roof.
Yeah, it's got to be I think it's a better battery, and the software is better. But the fact that you can get, I mean, they loaded battery life into this because they have to use a cellular radio.
They need
it. It's going to drain it.
Yeah,
but the battery life has been really great. What is the battery on this thing?
I think we have that in our teardown too.
It's a little bit larger, I think. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, it's a fair bit bigger than the last one.
1.07 watt hours, which is, according to my math, about a third bigger than the Series 1 watch.
Yeah.
So that would explain. I mean, unless you're using the LTE a lot,
right,
to make phone calls.
Yeah, you could kill, if you were on an hour-long phone call on this thing, you'll probably kill the battery.
But the way you and I use it,
who's going to do that?
I get to the end of the day, I'm still in the 90s,
yeah, 90%. It's kind of amazing.
It's really amazing. I'm very pleased with that.
I know some people who now, instead of charging their watch overnight, they charge it in the morning.
Well, that's
crazy.
They
wake up and they do sleep tracking. Yeah.
That's insane.
Sleep tracking.
Oh, sleep tracking.
Yeah, so they sleep with it on, tracking their sleep.
Nothing
and then
more
they charge
comfortable
it
than wearing a giant metal pillow.
These are just people. I hear them
They're
talking.
Just people.
Not me. Not it. I prefer the overnight charge.
Did they change the charging? Because it was always inductive charging. It always had a charge coil in it. Did they have to do anything to support Qi charging? Does that look different somehow? Can you see that in the?
It doesn't look super different. I actually have one opened up here, and you can kind of see the
coil,
charging
there?
Coil, sort of.
Yeah. Is that the copper thing there?
Yeah, it's under the black tape.
Okay.
And they.
Oh, I see it there.
Bit,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a way better.
It looks like an AM antenna.
And we should say that they've all done inductive charging before,
right,
because that's
In
how
fact,
it works.
It was pretty close to Qi charging. I remember it would work with regular chargers.
Yeah. However, it is important to note it doesn't work with Qi charging. It's only going to work with the new charger that Apple's putting out next year.
Okay.
That's that air power thing.
So you still need to use the stethoscope charger.
You'll need to use the stethoscope
until
Apple releases that air power thing.
Now, here's an interesting thing. Apple talked about an altimeter in the S3.
Right.
Barometric altimeter.
Get your steps in.
As the new thing, right? You could tell if you climbed stairs. But you guys found that there was an altimeter in the S2, the Series 2 watch as well.
Yeah. So we had found a really similar altimeter, and they, I guess they just didn't advertise it. But it's not super different in the new one. Maybe just has a different function or... Huh.
Or maybe the software just got updated to actually use
it. New software, yeah.
Interesting.
So what is the repairability? That's one of the things iFixo always says, based on how hard it was to take apart, how hard would it be for a third party, not Apple, Apple has special machines, but a third party to open it up and, let's say, replace the battery? What was your score on that?
So I believe it was a 6 out of 10. Is that?
That's what it says. That's surprisingly good.
Yeah, it's... It's not super complicated. It just takes a lot of patience, and you just got to be really gentle.
It looks like, though, that you guys gave it extra points because it's easy to change the watch band, which I can't deny. I don't know if I count that as repairability.
If you had asked people if it would be really easy to just, like, non-proprietarily build watch bands for an Apple Watch, people would have been like, no, I'm sure
Apple would never let that happen. You're using your fluoroelastomer band.
Yeah, I just put that on
but
this morning.
But I have
morning,
a ton
though,
of third-party bands. Yeah. I love it. And I just bought the Black Milanese loop to go with the...
The new Sport Loop is pretty nice, too. It looks weird,
I love
but it's actually
loop.
Really good.
Yeah, they can't call it Velcro.
No, but it totally is Velcro. But it's no, it's a hook and loop technology.
Which I always call hick and looper. Mm. I don't know why. All right, let's move on to the iPhone 8.
Yes.
And the actually,
got
you tore down an 8 Plus, not that little baby, but the big one.
It's just for more.
Just for more.
Complication, more
let's,
stuff.
Let's start with the bottom line first. Repairability, pretty good?
Not super good.
Not great. But it feels like it was better than last time. I don't know why. I thought you guys gave it a 0 last time. You're giving it a 6 this time around.
Yeah, the iPhone 7 was a bit easier because of the full aluminum case.
Oh, glass is probably
this
tough.
One. Yeah. Yeah, the glass back really messes it up. Yeah. That's hard to get off.
you know the it's breakable and easy to break as you're spudging it, and that would be a problem. But you did say that it's easy to change the thing that breaks the most often, the display, is not easy,
right,
but fairly straightforward to replace. And you make an excellent point that now that we're charging it wirelessly, there'll be less stress on the Lightning port. It won't be connected all the time. In fact, I haven't connected my Lightning port since I bought the phone and synced it up to iTunes. Ever since, it's been wirelessly charging, which I kind of like. I love wireless charging.
I'm not loving it so
far. You don't
love
it?
No, because you got to make the amount of time I need to make sure that I get it right on the charger and have the light up. And I've heard from people who get like a text and it vibrates and it slides off the charger.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, you need a better charger.
Yeah, because the one I've got is like a little helipad and you got to land the helicopter.
Yeah. No, you want easel chargers.
Will you lay it up against?
The new Note 8 charger is like that. It's a puck, but then you could tilt it up, and then it has a little lip. And the thing is, it's hard. It's very hard not to get it right if you put it in an easel. And I use one that I love. I'll get you one. It's from Tilt, TYLT. It's an easel charger, and that's what I use for this. It's simple. You just put it down on it. You can't go wrong. It's got three coils. You can put it upside
that's
down
better.
If you want. It's much better. So really, it's a question of getting the right
charger. Yeah, because those fat plastic pucks.
No. Those don't work.
I don't like
those
them.
Are terrible.
I'd rather just plug it in at that point.
Slide right off. So a 6 on both the Apple Watch Series 3 and the Apple iPhone Plus. It's not great, but it's not the worst it could be. I've seen the AirPods were 1.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So,
it's not.
I mean, that's not a high standard, but it's better than the AirPods.
So the battery story here is really interesting, and I feel like Apple does this from time to time where they claim the same battery life, but when you look at the battery, you see that the battery itself is smaller.
This is a smaller battery?
So what they've done is they've obviously made a more power-efficient processor, or some of the other parts are more power-efficient because they're claiming the same amount of battery life, but you guys found out that this is a smaller battery, right?
How much smaller?
Yeah, it's just slightly smaller.
That's disappointing.
Pretty close to the same size.
Apple never talks about the specs on the battery.
But they quote the hour figure.
Yeah, they say...
Because it's true. Like, the size of the battery is only important relevant to the power consumption.
Yeah, who cares? So this one is 10.28 watt-hours compared, according to iFixit, to the 11.1 watt-hours of the 7 Plus and 12.71 of the Note 8.
Right.
However, I have to say, this is... excellent battery life in the Plus. I don't know how your 8 is, but then the 8 Plus, it is, again, I get home 90%. Let me tell you right now.
One of those.
It's 100%.
One of those features in that A11 Bionic processor that's in there, right, that Apple builds themselves. And this one's got 6 cores, but it's got high efficiency cores and it's got the power cores. And when you're not stressing it out, it's using those low power processor cores, and it saves a lot of battery.
I mean, it's at 100%. It's 3:52 in the afternoon. I took it off the charger at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. It's still at 100%. Now, I've used it a little bit, not a lot, but that's the point. It can idle really well.
Yeah.
And
then it cranks up and uses all 6 cores if it needs to.
If it needs the processor speed, it's got it, but it doesn't normally use it. Apple does some magic stuff, I have to say, with battery life. In fact, to me, this is the best reason to own an iPhone, is because it'll get you through the day. Certainly the pluses will get you through the day easily.
For sure.
Adam O'Kam from iFixit, ifixit.com. Thank you so much. It's the repair manual for the internet.
That is the place to go.
We love them.
It really is.
And it's certainly the best way to find out what people put in there. Although Apple and others have pointed out, you can't always know what we've got based on the number on that chip. It might be not something.
And sometimes
custom.
They use different chips. And they use a couple of chips. You don't know.
But we do know about repairability. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Coming up, we're going to answer a caller's question.
Ooh.
You handpicked this question, so you better know the answer.
Well, we'll see.
You better know, buddy, because I sure don't. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. I love Rocket Mortgage. It comes from Quicken Loans, which is the best mortgage lender in the country. And if you go to quickenloans.com, you'll see all those customer satisfaction awards. So you know I'm not blowing smoke. This is real. Number one in customer satisfaction year after year for the mortgage approval process, for mortgage servicing. According to J.D. Power, number one, that's the best. But even better, they want a place in my heart because they've made a product just for geeks, an online approval process. You can get a mortgage, you can buy a new house, get a loan, or refi your existing house entirely online. No more going hat in hand to the lender. No more going up to the attic to get the paperwork. You get it all done in minutes online. Go there on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, rocketmortgage.com/NSS, because they've got trusted relationships with all the financial institutions. All you have to do is give them the basic information. They'll say, do you give us permission? You say yes, and boom, they will calculate in minutes based on income, assets, and credit all the home loan options that are right for you. You pick the term, you pick the rate, and bada bing, bada boom, in minutes, you are done. That is awesome. That is awesome. Last time I got a home loan with a big bank, the big bank, was 4 years ago. It took us months. I mean, I'm not, and that sounds like I'm exaggerating. I'm not. We went on vacation. We were faxing them documents from a cruise ship. It was crazy. I know this was exactly 4 years ago yesterday, the fourth anniversary of that nightmare. Never again. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently with Rocket Mortgage. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for making a product for us geeks, for supporting the new screensavers. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a call for help. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. I had some of the best barbecue I've ever had in my life in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mike is on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hello, how are you?
I am great. I'm thinking you have a little one, either that or you like toys.
Both of those are true, but I have some toys back there in the basement and some art my daughter made.
So. And the NASA T-shirt, I think I spy.
Oh, so, look at that.
Yes, that's correct.
I approve. That's the meatball, too. And, that's the best
logo. And an Apple Watch to boldly go where no watch has gone before. So what can we do for you, Mike?
So I have a great question. I've been waiting for either Rene Ritchie or Jason to be on to ask this specific thing.
Perfect.
And I think also that his answer is going to be there isn't a good answer, which is a good thing, so we can bring Apple to the table to fix this. So my question is, we're an all-Apple household, and we use the photos and our of course, our iPhones, et cetera. But we'd like all our photos to go to one place. So if I'm traveling and I take a picture, it automatically is synced up so they can see it. And then for not disaster recovery purposes, but one place my wife can have all the family photos that she can manipulate them on her iMac. And so far, I've tried scripting the raw files. I've tried using streaming. Things like that. And then the one thing I think the Apple solution is the family shared.
That's right.
Or whatever it's called.
That's right. Yeah.
And that is only a drag and drop feature. So there's no way that every picture I take automatically is in that location. And this seems like something Apple would be a no-brainer for them to do. If I use Google Photos or something else, I lose live photo capability. So you lose something with every option.
Oh, yeah, because that would be my recommendation. I use Google Photos all the time.
And unfortunately, that is right now the best fallback is to sync everybody to Google Photos, because at least that'll be a shared library. You could even use the same Google ID, or you could use Google sharing feature, which is, I'm not sure if that's out yet, but they've announced it. The good news,
the sharing feature is now available.
This is not good news, but the good news is iOS 11 brings in this new feature which allows a family to share one account's storage space that they purchase, which means you no longer need to buy an extra storage plan for every device in your household. It's great.
And what we used to do is we'd get one account, one iCloud account, and everybody would log into it.
But Apple's made that too difficult now.
And it's a bad idea because, I was getting my son's text messages. And
My Friends breaks down at that point because there's only one person on an Apple ID.
We're all in,
So you get a family account, you set it up, you can share space now, which I used to have to pay separately.
Can you take one of your accounts and delegate it as the family account, or do you have to create a new account?
No, you set one of your accounts as the master account for the family, and that's awesome. And then you say, here's my family members, and you put them in there. And then you can say in iOS 11, share my space. The bad news is the space total number is shared, but no data sharing goes on, which is great for privacy. But what it means is Apple's got us with separate photo libraries still. And, I would say, Mike, that you and I probably were both really hoping for the same thing, which is that
you should have a shared iCloud.
This was
going to
be the year that iCloud photo libraries could be shared, and it's not.
Yes, because I'm willing to pay the money. I bought the 2 terabyte plan. Like, all I want, I'll pay for the service. I want the photos to magic go there. And it seems like such an Apple thing to do. They all have families. So I'm hoping, even if we don't come to a good conclusion, that they're watching at least one of them and says, yes, this is important.
And you mentioned the family shared photos, which when I write about this same issue and I've written about it and I've complained about it, the people say, well, there's that family shared photo album. Not only do you have to manually add photos to that photo album, but they're down-resed. They are not high-resolution photos. So you can't use it and then copy them over to your master library, even manually, because you won't get the full-resolution photo. So I don't have a good solution. What happens in my household a lot of the time is that, well, the good news is, at least now that everybody's on my 2 terabyte storage plan, they can all sync all their photos into the cloud on their own iCloud photo libraries, and they won't be lost if something happens to their phone, which is what would happen to my daughter if she lost those. So that's good, but in reality, we either plug phones into the master photo library every now and then and import the photos across a USB cable.
Wait a minute.
The other way to do it is Google Photos.
It does say when you set up your family that a joint family photo album is created.
Yes, that's the one he's talking about. But you have to add photos
to
it manually.
Put stuff in there.
And they're not full resolution. They're a down-resed version.
And if you're like our family, if you're 70 gigs behind catching up, I've tried to drag and drop, gigs at a time. It never works.
You'll never, right, because it's a separate transfer. It's not just pulling it out of the cloud. It's making a separate transfer. It's not good. So we can rail about this all we like. The bottom line is, either doing it by wire, which is not fun, to the master account, or something like Google Photos, where you're creating another library in parallel, but you get to do kind of unlimited at a decent resolution, and at least it's a place where everybody can see the photos. But and then meanwhile, back up everybody do iCloud photo library syncing in the meantime, because they're if they're sharing your 2 terabytes, that means that they can at least have a backup of the full resolution version. But it's a mess, So Google Photos is my fallback right now, which is at least you could all see all of your photos together.
All you lose is the live capability. Yeah. You know what you could say is, hey, if you really like one of these, I got the live version, I can send it to you.
Yeah, and you can airdrop it.
That's kind of what I do with Google Photos is, because it also downsizes it a little bit. I don't notice the difference.
Only if you've got a very high resolution.
It doesn't seem to make it much worse. Yeah. But I always say to Lisa, well, these are all the photos, but if you want the raw file of any of these,
just ask.
I'm not saying, just ask. And and that way, you kind of get the best of both worlds.
And for my daughter, who's 15, takes a lot of selfies, takes a lot of photos. One of the nice things about adding her in iOS 11 to our shared storage, that 2 terabytes of storage, is at least now we can say, sync your photos and manage storage on your device. So her phone doesn't fill up with photos and videos, and they're all in the cloud. Yep. So we aren't able to share them directly yet, but at least they're there, and she's not going to lose her photos that she's taking with her friends, which was a problem when she only had the 5 gig backup that comes with a device.
The other downside about the shared family album is it's limited to 5,000 photos and videos. That's a very small number if you've got a...
Now, what Google's going to do is Google's got a family sharing system that works a little differently across Google IDs. And
it's smart. It does face recognition.
Yeah.
So I can say, anytime I take a picture of Lisa, share that with her automatically, which is just fantastic. Because she's always, when we get back from trips, she's always saying, well, did you get any good pictures of me? Now she gets them all.
Now, it doesn't go into her library. My understanding is it goes into a shared album that she would need to add to her library. You don't have a common library, which is definitely what my wife and I would like to have. But it's better than what Apple's providing. Yeah. And one of the reasons Apple, I asked Apple about this last year, and they said it's hard because there are lots of use cases where you don't want to share everything, which is what Google's trying to do with face recognition.
Right.
I feel like Apple's going to get there, and maybe the first step is sharing your iCloud space. So maybe that's like step one, and step two will be actually sharing photo libraries. But, you know, it's going to be another year at least before that happens. So
there are other third party. I mean, the live photos thing, only Apple's going to support live photos. But there are other third party solutions like Google. If you didn't want to store on Google, we've talked before about Shutterfly. When Scott Bourne, our photographer friend, was here, he said, you know, Shutterfly is unlimited free full quality uploads, and you could put a Shutterfly app on all of your phones and log into the same account, and then you'd have one account with all the photos.
Dropbox will do it. If you've got if you're paying for a terabyte on Dropbox, you could put all the photos there.
But
that would
work.
The
nice thing about Shutterfly, it's like Google Photos, is free. Amazon Prime is free if you're an Amazon Prime member. So having an unlimited amount of storage somewhere, at least for backup.
And that's the thing that I really advise is if you try out one of these services, if you've got access to the Amazon library, if you've got access to the Google Photos library, you can do that and still be syncing all of your high-res originals with iCloud.
Right.
And iCloud is going to be the place that you know you've got a version of that file in case something happens to your phone, but you may be able to use Amazon or Google as a front end to share or to, you know, to use their kind of services just for the animations that Google makes in Google Photos that are fun. So you could do that while still having the full res version.
I have to say, as sad as it is that it doesn't do exactly what you want, Mike, they've come a long way. iCloud has come a long way. iCloud Photo Drive has come a long way from where it was.
Well, the fact that we believe that you can trust your photos to sync to iCloud, I would never have said that 4 years ago. But it's a lot better. It's just that the features, the family sharing feature, is just still missing. It's 3 years and still missing.
But that's one minor, not maybe minor, but one piece compared. I mean, they've reached parity in some respects in terms of the Photos app. And this stuff is all done on the phone, which is great.
Right. It's doing machine
in terms of recognition
learning,
and location, creation of albums.
It now syncs your facial recognition training across devices. So if you say this is a photo of Jerry, then
it knows
on all your devices that that's a photo of Jerry.
Yeah. So I have to say they've gotten a lot better. They've made some real progress, and I think there's hope that they might finally get this piece of the
This is the direction they're heading. They just I share your disappointment that I thought this would be the year. I thought they would really do it this year, and when they didn't mention it at their developer conference in June, it's like, so close.
Mike, you're obviously a very sophisticated Mac user, Apple user, so you just pretended to want to know the answer to this question, right?
He's trying to shake the tree.
Well, no, I actually thought there might be some nugget.
Maybe magic, some magic. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish.
Okay, so can I ask a follow-up part of the question?
Sure.
We pray. So if you were going to do, you said a USB cable, so I can't fit everything on my phone, right? But if I actually was to export in a manner to a USB device, a USB 3.0 device that had enough capacity and then import via cable, what was the export function you would use? You don't want to drag and drop them. Is there a file export? What would you use?
What I'm thinking is you have one Mac that's running Photos, the Photos app that is syncing to iCloud Photo Library, and your account, let's say, is already hooked up, so you don't need to attach it to your Mac and import photos. But every month or so, your wife's camera, your children's cameras, whatever iPhones they've got, you would plug them into that same Mac and choose import.
Sure.
And just bring in all those folders. And we do that with my daughter, and we do that with my wife's iPhone. And it's not great, but it does mean that every month or two, their photos get put into the giant master photo library where
it
can be intermingled.
That's the problem, is that I've not done that, so I'm months and months behind. So I've got to catch up somehow or pray they're going to solve it in a year and not worry about it. Yeah. And then someday they'll magically glob everything together.
We're all just praying a lot.
Yeah. Come on, Apple. You can do it.
But you know, I decided that Apple's the new religion. So go ahead and pray to St. Steve. He'll hear your prayers. He will. They designed the Apple stores like cathedrals for crying out loud. They got apses. I mean,
it's a classic architecture,
It's classic architecture, yeah.
I'd like to see a cathedral with glass, all glass walls.
Oh, me too.
And you know they don't want you looking in.
Thank you, Mike. Great to talk to you again.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Next week, Speaking of cathedrals, Father Padre. Robert Bellisair, the digital Jesuit, will be my co-host. If you've got questions, why is the sky blue, Father Robert? Here's how you can ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
You know what? I feel so stupid. I lost my AirPods. I don't know where they were. I can't figure it out. Did I leave them in France? I think they're in a pocket.
Did you find my AirPods?
Yeah, and it says, as soon as you connect to your AirPods, we'll let you know where they are.
Oh, boy.
Boy, I oughta. And then somebody on the Twitter says, well, Leo, why didn't you put a tracker on it? Don't! Oh, well, I bought another pair of AirPods. By the way, they come right away now.
Oh, good.
There seems to be no backlog.
They can make them now.
And this one's going to have a tracker on it. The tracker is amazing. It's a Bluetooth coin-sized tracking device. It pairs with your smartphone. You can have up to 10 devices paired with your phone, which is really nice. And you can share multiple trackers with multiple phones. So everybody in your family can find your AirPods.
Sharing is good.
Sharing is good. Sharing is caring. We have a tracker right here. I've lost it. Fortunately.
Oh, the irony.
The irony. No, fortunately, I paired it with my phone. The tracker app is great. So you put this on your whatever. Your key. I have it on my keys. I have it in my backpack. I have it in my suitcases. Mm-hmm. And this is the Tracker Pixel, which is really awesome for your keys. The Tracker Pixel lights up as well as making noise. So if I've lost, say I this is on my keys and I lost my keys, I would go to my tracker app on my phone and I'd say, ping my keys. This would go and light up, which is really cool. So if I fell, if they fell down behind the sofa or something, it'd be very easy for me to find them. And then it has two-way alerts. So if I leave the keys behind, my phone will yell at me. If I leave the phone behind, the keys will yell at me.
Oh,
if I can't find the phone, all the trackers have a little button on them. You push it, and even if your phone is silenced, it'll make a loud noise of your choice, and you can find your phone. But the best part is the Tracker Crowd GPS network, and this is really their secret sauce. See, it turns out they've sold more than 5 million trackers. There are tracker users all over the world. And whenever a tracker user walks by your tracker, your phone will say, hey, somebody just saw your keys. Here's where they are. That means if you lose your keys, let's say I left them in France. Now, that's way out of Bluetooth range, obviously. Mm-hmm. But anybody who walks by them is going to alert me, and I can turn that on in my tracker app. You don't want to turn it on until you need it, though, because otherwise, every time you walk by your keys, they'll go, those are your keys? Those are your keys. Yeah, I found your keys. Your keys are right here. So once you lose something, turn on the notifications, and it's kind of cool. It'll say, oh, your keys were just spotted. It is awesome. And it's the best way not to lose anything. And with their 30-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. There are other Bluetooth tracking devices out there. One of the things I hate about the other ones, you can't pair 10 to your phone. And when the battery dies on those other guys' device,
you throw
it away. Not the tracker. It's a replaceable battery. Mm. Easily replaced. Bluetooth LE means you get great battery life. You can locate your item no matter where it is, anywhere in the world. The tracker. They've got the Tracker Bravo, light, thin, anodized aluminum, engravable. They've got the new Tracker Pixel with the LED lights. Go stock up on trackers at TheTracker.com, thetracker.com. And once you get your shopping cart full, use the offer code NSS and you can subtract 20% off any order. That's a secret code. Don't tell anybody. Well, okay, tell everybody. Go to thetracker.com, use the promo code NSS for 20% off. We thank Tracker for their support. They've really, it's amazing. When they first started with us, they'd sold 1.5 million. They sell something like 100,000 a month now.
Wow.
So it is, they're growing like
never
crazy.
Lose anything.
I love this.
Ever again.
I love this.
My kids need those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The mailbag is coming up. But first, Megan with part six. I hope you're cleaning out. She's got part six of her digital cleanse. This is a big one. Really important watch.
Welcome back to week six of the new Screensavers Digital Cleanse. Another day, another hack. The most recent Equifax hack was not caused by a bad password, but now that our information is on the loose, it's as good a time as ever to digitally cleanse our passwords. I think we can all agree that passwords are a pain in the tuchus, but unless you've given your face over to Apple to hang on their creepy Face ID wall, you still need passwords. I can tell you all the basic rules that you probably already know. Don't use dictionary words. Use a passphrase. Don't reuse passwords. But just because we know the rules doesn't mean any of us are any good at following them. I know I'll feel bad after eating glazed donuts, but I still eat them. If you have followed me on this cleanse this far, then I know you are ready to make a change. So let's do it together. I think the best way to cleanse your toxic password practices is to use a password manager. Some of you, of course, will disagree with me, but my favorite is and has always been LastPass. LastPass lets you store all your passwords in one secure place, so you only have to remember one password, your LastPass password. Don't ever forget that. LastPass will also create secure passwords for you depending on the requirements of the site. You can store profile and credit card information so you can create accounts and pay for things all over the internet in just a few clicks. There's a free version of LastPass, but the premium version is only $2 per month. Free LastPass includes unlimited password storage, and now you can sync across all your devices, which is new. LastPass Premium offers additional password sharing options and support for YubiKey, a physical security key for serious two-factor authentication. If you're unsure of which version is right for you, you can try Premium for free for 60 days. If you already have LastPass and you've committed to the cleanse, your work is not over yet. It's probably time to clean up that mess you've made, including duplicate entries in your vault. LastPass has a deduplicator to help. Go to LastPass Vault, Account Settings, Show Advanced Settings, then click the Remove Duplicates button at the very bottom. And as long as you're already in settings, it's time to turn on multi-factor authentication for your LastPass account. Click multi-factor options and then choose a service to add another layer of protection to LastPass. Next, if you are annoyed by all the two-factor steps that you have to take on your own personal devices, you can do a little cleansing by turning on trusted devices in your account. That way, you won't be asked to provide your multi-factor authentication on your personal iPhone, your iPad, or your laptop. To enable this, go to Account Settings, Trusted Devices. Just know that trusted devices automatically expire after 30 days, so you will have to do this again. If you don't want to use LastPass and you're in the Apple ecosystem, try Apple's iCloud Keychain. If you're a Chrome user, you might prefer Google's Smart Lock. A note on Keychain. An ex-NSA hacker recently claimed that Keychain is vulnerable to an attack that could expose your passwords. While this is true, the hacker must first infect your Mac with malware. So try to let them not do that. Don't open emails with attachments from people you don't know. Don't click on suspicious web pop-ups. And don't download software from weirdos. These are cleansing tips I think we all need reminding about from time to time. Also, by the time you see this, Apple might have already plugged that keychain hole. Let's hope that they do. Whether it's LastPass, 1Password, Dashlane, iCloud, Keychain, Google Smart Lock, or some other password manager of your choice, once you've set up and cleaned up your system, it's time to clear old passwords from your browser. If you're using Chrome, at the top right, click More, and then click Settings. At the bottom, click Advanced. Under Passwords and Forms, click Manage Passwords. Under Saved Passwords, to the right of the website, click More, and then Remove. The next step in our password cleanse is to change that password on your Wi-Fi network. This doesn't happen so much anymore, but Wi-Fi routers used to come with super secure passwords like admin or password. If you don't already know how to change that, look up or contact your service provider or your router manufacturer and find out how to change the default username and password. And don't forget to make this password secure too. iOS 11 has a new feature that will let you easily share your passwords with friends and family who come to your house. If your guest is also using iOS 11, it will automatically ask you if you want to share your network password. Your guest logs on and you don't even have to tell them your super secret password. This is a new feature and it doesn't always work, but there's no reason to have an insecure password on your Wi-Fi network. Here is one last cleansing step I want you to take, and this one might be the hardest. It's time to see if any of your personal account data is out in the public domain so you can delete or change your login information. The best way to do that is to visit security expert Troy Hunt's Have I Been Pwned site at haveibeenpwned.com. And pwned is spelled P-W-N-E-D. Just search for Troy Hunt if you can't find it. Enter usernames or email addresses to find out if any of your accounts have been compromised in one of the many, many data breaches. Chances are they have. If you haven't changed the password on those sites, go take some time to do it now. And now my favorite time of this segment, Gold Stars time. The first one goes to Lycia, who showed me the before and after on her desktop and her Gmail. She got down to 999 unread emails in her inbox. That might seem like a lot still, but she started at 4,340. I sent Lycia an email asking her how many messages she has left to delete, but she hasn't replied yet, probably because there are 999 messages in front of mine. Our second gold star goes to Maximiliano, who sent me several digital cleanse tips for emotional sanity. To avoid digital gluttony, Maximiliano suggests not opening your phone right when you wake up or right when you go to sleep. He writes, stop just going through all your apps, sniffing for any kind of stimulating activity. Solution, create a habit of jumping to your night and morning routine instead of your phone. That's a good advice. Right now, my night and morning routine do involve my phone, so I will work on that. And our final gold star of the week goes to Allison Sheridan of the Podfeet Podcasts, who writes, you know how if you go through your closet and take out the things you don't wear, you find maybe a half a dozen or so outfits to give away? But if you take out everything and put back what you do wear, you end up with five times as much to give away. Same thing is true for apps. Do a clean install and only install apps as you go to use them and realize that they're not there. I usually end up with far less than half as many when I'm done. This also means you're not deleting apps, but leaving their P-lists and cache files all over the place. You don't want any of those messy P-lists all over the place. It can make an old machine run like new. And thanks to everyone who is still digitally cleansing with us. That means you. Thank you. Next week, we're talking hardware because all of us need a little dongle cleansing now and then. Am I right? I'm Megan Maroney, and I host iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific and Tech News Weekly every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific.
Our newest show on Twitten.
Yeah.
You must start watching Thursday's Tech News Weekly. The idea is there's news. Basically, we took TNT, our daily news show, and we said, well, we'll just do it one day a week because people don't, frankly, want five podcasts piling up on their podcast player. But we'll take one show a week, and we'll interview the biggest names, the big newsmakers, so you'll really kind of get a deep dive into those stories. I'm very proud of it. It's twit.tv/TNW if you want to subscribe.
You ever done a dongle cleansing?
You know, dongles is one of those words you just won't die, will it?
It's
too funny. In the early days of tech TV, I'm ashamed to admit, we spent a lot of time cleaning mouse balls. Same thing.
Yeah.
Very much like dongle cleansing.
Yep.
Thank God, there's no more mouse balls.
No.
They're gone. In fact, today, they're listening. They're saying, what are you talking, mouse balls?
Look it up on the internet, people. Wow, can you imagine that Google search?
Don't look it up on the internet. It'll brand you for the rest of your life. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the mailbag.
Jason Snell of sixcolors.com.
Well, you haven't been presented with the Dinty Moore Stowe. Wait a minute. Check expiration on bottom. Jerry will eat it best by October 2017. Jerry.
It's time.
Jerry grew up on Dinty Moore beef stew. That's for some. There's some strange reason this keeps showing up in the mailbox. But, Jerry.
It's at its best now.
It's peak of perfection. It's aged. Come on, Jerry, open it up. We got a spoon. It's all yours, my friend.
Oh, my God.
Jerry Wagley, who just came back from Austin, Texas, and he's doing a queso cleanse. Jerry.
Best by
now. He loves this stuff. Do you eat it like that, or you pour it over toast, or what do you do?
You eat it up.
Eat it up.
Yeah.
Eat it up. Dinty Moore. Not a sponsor. Email one, I have an old iPhone 4S. That is old.
That is.
And I like the SE because it's small. It's an iPhone 5S, basically,
yeah.
Right? but and it takes better pictures. But, oh, this is a great question from Joy. Should I buy it now, or will they be updating the SE with an SE2 in the near future?
Oh, well, that is, I don't have a good answer.
Well, we never know because Apple doesn't ever.
It's been about 18 months since the SE came out. And we knew it wasn't probably going to be an every year kind of phone. But the question is it an every 2 years kind of phone? If so, then in the spring, they would maybe do a new version of the SE. I think it's like a 50-50 chance. So the question is, do you want to wait or not? Because the SE is good. It's the shape of a 5.
Right.
But with it's the power of processor. A 6S.
Yeah.
So pretty
and,
good.
And it's cheap. It's $350 bucks, right?
It is the out lowest the priced iPhone, yeah.
But what Apple did something interesting this year. They didn't kill any of the previous models. So you can get an SE, but you can also get a 6, 6S, 7, 7 Plus, 8, 8 Plus. They have all of them. What about for her a 6 instead of an SE?
Well, if she likes the size of the smaller
phone,
that the
small.
SE is the one to get. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, the 6 and 6S are going to be comparable to the SE, but the SE's got the size going for it, and it's not just a low-cost phone. And I think it's important to note, it's not a super slow phone. It is now a little bit old because it's a year and a half old, but when it was released, it had the top-of-the-line processor and the top-of-the-line camera parts.
And it runs iOS 11 just fine.
Yeah, so it's basically a 6S in the shape of a 5.
Yeah.
So the question is, like, how badly do you want to replace that 4S? Because if you can wait until spring, maybe there will be a new SE. That said,
what platform would they base that on, the 7?
7, or it might even be the 8. It might even be the processor in the 8.
Because then they'll do a 9 or 10 or whatever.
Right.
What is, by the way...
Well, we're talking iPhone numbers.
What the hell's going to happen next year? Are they going to do an iPhone 9?
I would bet they are going to do an iPhone 9 that's like an update to the 8. And then the question, real question
will
is, what
do
they
11?
Do, what do they do with the 10? Do they make it an iPhone 11? And get
what if
Spinal
they made
Tap
it the iPhone Y and then just surprised everybody?
Well, the problem with calling it the iPhone 10 is that iPhone X2 is a way cooler name, right? But they already called it the 10. So
I really, it's, I
don't know
I,
what they're going to do.
When that rumor came out, it wasn't really a rumor, it was a leak, came out shortly before the announcement. I thought, that's disinformation. There's no way. They'd be nuts. They actually eliminated 10 from Mac OS. They cut it off. And I said, why aren't they going to call it the iPhone Pro? They've got an iPad Pro. They've got a MacBook Pro. Yeah. They've got a Mac Pro. They don't have an iPhone Pro. Why did they name it the 10? Which, by the way, I want to tell you, everybody, even people like me who know better,
call it the X. I know. I don't know why. I think they wanted. They like the idea that it's the message that it's an advanced phone that it's
extra good.
You know, it's that this is the 8, but look, here's the future's phone today. I think that is part of it, but it's. I don't know. Apple. I thought Apple was getting its naming house in order.
They're not.
And now there's the iPhone
X. Screwed it all up.
They got the iPads all make sense now.
Right.
You know, all the other products make sense.
Pro.
Yeah.
But I think what they decided is they don't want to imply that the anything else is less than Pro. So that's kind of
what
they did.
And what is a phone? What is a Pro phone?
What does Pro
mean? Professional in that context? But I think for Joy, the real answer is how desperately do you want a new phone? Because
if you can wait.
The SE is great. Like, you could go out and get one if you want
that size
phone.
My daughter got another one.
She broke
her SE. She bought another one.
It's really good. And it's a great value. And it's not, you're not buying a phone with four-year-old tech in it. It's,
right.
It is year and a half-old tech now, but or two-year-old tech. But it's still, those processors are pretty great. If you can wait until spring.
Spring?
50,
why spring?
Chance.
Why do you think spring?
Well, that's because that's when the first one came out. And I think
they don't want to get it all in cadence and have everything in September.
I think they're so busy building, designing and building those phones that they want to focus on those phones, and then they'll add it.
I don't think I'm
going to
get
in
an iPhone 10 till the spring.
But there's no guarantee that the SE will get updated in the spring.
Right. We're just making that up. No one knows. Only Apple knows.
I'm a real believer. Like, if you want a new phone now, you should get it now.
Yeah.
Don't wait, because there's always going to be better tech in the future.
Yeah.
For any product any tech product that you do, there will always be something better.
Yeah. You have a question. Why don't you
email
read
number
that
one? Two is from Ryan, who says, while browsing in Safari on my Mac and then switching to an iPhone, I can fairly easily see what I recently browsed on the Mac. How do you do this vice versa?
Wait a minute. Mine does that automatically. When I've been browsing something on my iPhone because of continuity, I see an extra icon, a Safari icon on my dock.
The current
of what I'm browsing on the iPhone.
I think what he's talking about is the is iCloud Tabs, basically, which is this idea that you've got...
Oh, more than just the current
You've got
page.
What are the windows that are open. Right, you know, on your other devices that are associated with your Apple ID. I think that's what Ryan
won't
means.
Do that.
And the answer is, if you haven't tried it, Ryan, is when you're in Safari, go on your trackpad and pinch...
Pinch.
Like you're zooming out on the Safari window. Instead of zooming in, you zoom out. And you zoom out to this view with all of your tabs and recents and stuff. And down at the bottom of that view are your iCloud tabs. And it'll say, here's your phone and all the pages that are open.
Oh, that's
nice.
Here's
your iPad and all the pages
that
are
open.
That's the answer. So I think that's what he's looking for. And it's a little bit easier to see it on iOS than it is on the Mac because you have to get to that view where you zoom back out and you sort of see all – you see like thumbnails of all your open tabs. And below that, you see all of your
iCloud.
Open tabs on other devices.
Yes, I've seen that. I know what you're
and
talking about.
And I use that all the time because I'm reading something on my iPhone and then I'm at my Mac and I'm like, what is that?
There it is.
And,
look at that.
And you just pinch and open it up and there it is.
You'll also see what you've opened on your iPad.
Any
you see
device
your phone,
you've got linked to your Apple ID will show up down there with a list of all of the open tabs.
I get a lot of stuff there. That's nice. So
just pinch.
Pinch. Is there a way to turn off continuity so I don't see what I've been browsing on my because I get that extra icon.
You get
the
little
dock.
Extra icon. Yeah. I don't know. Possibly. You might be able to go into the dock preferences.
I guess I'll leave
something.
It on. It's handy sometimes.
Every now and then.
I like the pinch though. That's
every now and then.
That's why that's
why
we like to have Jason come in because he knows all this stuff. He's an expert.
Got a pinch on the trackpad.
He is an expert on all these little things. And all you have to do is go to sixcolors.com. Keep up with all the Apple news. Follow him on Twitter at J-S-E-N-E-L-L, Jay Snell.
That's me.
And my God, if you're not subscribed to the Incomparable and download,
Upgrade. Relay FM for my tech stuff and my pop culture stuff's all at theincomparable.com.
Yeah. You ought to subscribe. You'd be missing.
You get more
great
more
stuff.
Me.
As somebody tweeted just this morning, I told my husband, she said, if I wanted bad puns, I'd listen to The Incomparable.
Accurate. Accurate depiction. Puns, movies, comics.
So nice to
TV.
See you. Thank
it's
you.
Great
for coming
to be
up.
Here.
I really appreciate it. We do the new screensavers every Saturday afternoon. I hope you'll come by. We had a great studio audience from Australia and San Francisco. All you have to do is email. We do want you to do this, by the way. Email tickets at twit.tv. The studio has now some days like there's not much being done on Monday, so we're probably going to close the studio. So don't just assume you can wander by and come on in. If we don't have a guard, if we don't have our security guard present, we're not going to have the studio open because I want to make sure our staff is safe. So make sure you – best thing to do, you can try dropping by, but there's no guarantee you'll be invited in. Best thing to do if you know you're coming to town – Petaluma, California, great place, wine country, Lagunitas beer. Email tickets at twit.tv. That way we'll know you're coming. We'll put a place out for you. We'll give you directions, all the information you need to know. Tickets at twit.tv. We do the show. You can watch it live streaming, too, at twit.tv/live every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. And actually, that's going to change. When do we go back to regular time? When is daylight time? And it's so no one
after
knows.
Halloween. It's in November.
It's a mystery now because they've moved it.
Well, and the British summertime will change
they're
before
gonna,
the American.
Yeah,
time
they're
going to
end. That's it's all very confusing. But we are still on summertime, so that means 2200 UTC. And when it changes, well, I'll let you know. It'll be 2300 UTC, or is it 2100? You know, no one really knows because time is a mystery. As Albert Einstein once said.
It's a great mystery.
It's a mystery. I don't understand anything. You can also, you know what, if this is confusing, you know what you could do? You could subscribe. That way you'd have it on your phone anytime you wanted it. Just go to twit.tv/NSS to download episodes and to subscribe. Or your favorite podcaster like Overcast, Marco Arment's great podcast client, or Pocket Casts, Australian.
Yes.
Great product. Stitcher, Slacker. And don't forget, we're on TuneIn Internet Radio. So that enables your Echo. You can, anytime you could say Echo, listen to the new screensavers on TuneIn. It'll give you the latest episode. Or if you want to watch or listen live to whatever's going on live, say Echo, listen to Twit Live on TuneIn and you'll get the live stream. That's a little Echo tip. I think you could do the same thing on the Google Home. I don't remember what the syntax is. Experiment. You never know what you're going to get. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new screensavers. Bye-bye.
Yeah.